The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine this Thursday, the 16th of March, 2023. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show, the last one of the week, because of course tomorrow is public holiday, our national day, St. Patrick's Day. So we have moved our Friday panel forward to a Thursday panel. They'll be joining us shortly. We want you involved in the conversation, of course. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApps and text number. Give us a call alternatively on 07491 25000. Email us your comments at comments@highlandradio.com, and if you choose to watch, don't forget to comment there. You can watch on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, on your TV, Fire Stick, or your tablet, laptop, whatever you choose. And you can also watch directly on our website, highlandradio.com. All right, without further ado, let's say good morning to Breed Curran, solicitor. Welcome back to the show, Breed. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are also joined by Deputy Joe McHugh. Good morning, Joe. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you with us. And last but not least, Michael Margay, Head of Business Faculty at ATU. A very good morning to you, Michael. Long time no see, it seems, as well. Good to have you with us. All right. Okay, I mean, let's start with a topical one. It's kind of obvious. I don't like doing obvious stuff, but sure, here we are. St. Patrick's Day is our emissions nightmare, some have described it. Do you know why? Because of the impact of Ireland's jet-setting TDs. 35 of them, I think, are scattered around the world. Our own Charlie McConlogue's business class trip will do as much damage as a family home and a car combined in terms of their impact on the environment. The government leaders, they're going to produce 17 tonnes of CO2e with, believe it or not, the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan, our biggest polluter. So how, with a straight face, can these people impose bans and taxes that they do and cry about too many cars on the road? It's practice what you preach, Breed. What's going on here?
I loved this story in the Examiner this morning about Eamon Ryan's emissions. Apparently he has to go vegan for 7 years to counteract the carbon footprint. Look, at I don't know any other nation, maybe my other contributors here today might know of another nation, but I certainly don't know of any other nation that has the global reach that this country, this small little country on the edge of Europe, has for one day on the 17th of March. We're literally in the global spotlight for 24 hours. And it's such a huge opportunity for the likes of the IDA and Enterprise Ireland to showcase what we do here in Ireland. And particularly coming on the back of our success, or rather lack of success, but 14 shows in the Oscars. It's such a great little country. We're punching way above our weight with regards to business and the arts and culture. And if we look at Ireland as a business, if we were looking at it in that point of view, of course a company would send out its CEO and executives to showcase what it is we do on a global basis. We would be extremely foolish not to send our TDs and our ministers around the world to showcase what it is we do, because it's good from a business point of view. Might not be so good from obviously the ecological point of view.
But Breed, can we, and I get that, and the business argument is a strong one, and I've spoken to people who went on a trip to China, you know, 2 decades ago, and on the face of it, they came back empty-handed, you could argue, and then business deals were forged and markets were opened, and you can the two are never connected. But we can't take that in isolation, sort of go, yeah, but it's great for the country, it's great for getting us out there. Because our day-to-day life here, right, is being told that you can't, you know, don't burn turf. We have to use coal, which is not very effective, I'm not going to lie to you. Mm-hmm. We're having the conversations about, you know, taxes on our fuels and zero emission houses by 2028. You know, we can't just separate that and say, yeah, but see, for this one day, it's good because we need to get our message out there, because it's not the lived reality for most people, and it just doesn't make sense.
It's all about balancing it, Greg, and we have to get it right. But I mean, if we look at it from a practical point of view, if all our ministers fly economy rather than first class, I understand Minister McConlogue is flying first class to New Zealand.
Business class, I think that might just be two rows back. I'm not quite sure.
I don't know. I've never flown first class. I wouldn't know. But the point is, there are economies that can be made. And maybe Eamon Ryan should go vegan for 7 years to make up for the fact that he's flown across the world.
Might be a different type. It might be a different type of emissions he'd be worried about if he did that. But anyway, we'll come back to you. Michael Margie, yes, I know, and I think you're very well placed to make the argument about business, the connections, the worth to our economy. I get that, right? But again, I'll put it to you. It can't be taken in isolation, because a lot of the conversation is about what we need to be doing to reduce our carbon footprints. And we watch then whilst those that are telling us to do just that, you know, we're flying all over the world and causing great damage themselves.
Yeah, look, I think Breed's point was really well made there about, you know, for a small nation or country and the global reach and impact that we have, particularly on St. Patrick's Day. And we have a huge diaspora. And for all those people who are abroad, it's really great to see the St. Patrick's Days happening abroad. I think the other aspect then is really about having the balance, which Bree mentioned as well. And the word I would bring into it is, you know, at every point now, we have to look at how we're being responsible, you know, in the world we live in today, for our environment and everything else. And I think that on the one hand, you know, it's hard to see how you can get around the world without using a plane. And that really does have huge impacts in terms of the amount of tons of carbon it's going to create, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to look then, and probably for the organization or department that you have responsibility for, to say, right, you know, what's our total carbon footprint? We're going to have to travel. And what are the other things that we can do to mitigate that? Or to reduce that in other activities that we can do, because there's certain activities we can't get away from. Like, you know, how are we going to get to New Zealand? We're going to have to fly. We can't take the slow boat. But what we have to be responsible. And overall, now it's incumbent on all of us for the world we live in today. How are we going to be socially responsible? How are we going to be environmentally responsible? And when you just touched on that point about business, you know, there's been huge changes and trends coming into business now where business has to be fair, decent, socially responsible, environmentally responsible. That's a different language or vernacular that we would have been talking 10 years ago for sure. And I think that's a good step forward for business. But we got to make sure that that's not just a veneer, that we're actually really meaning what we're doing, what we're saying. It's not just
so. So what are you, like, what you're articulating is not what I've been hearing. I've not heard from anyone about offsetting any of this. You know, no suggestions of maybe do we have to do it every single year? Could we not show leadership? What kind of traction might you get from leadership by having an online summit with our colleagues in New Zealand, for example? Line up a few deals in advance. You know, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I hear what Breed is saying, but I'm also living in the reality where none of what you are saying actually exists. Perhaps it should.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you come back to the pandemic and where we had to move so much online, and you know, we learned a lot from that. There's some benefits from that as well. But for me, I really feel, you know, turning up in person is really, really important. We're social beings at the end of the day. It's about making that connection, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, for our own diaspora, I have three brothers all abroad. You know, it's great to see St. Patrick's Day. It's great to see, you know, our own representatives over there on that day. There's that whole other side of it as well, which is outside of Ireland, across the world. And it's a day, huge celebration. But in terms of environment and climate, and being socially responsible, you know, that's where, you know, the organizations, the business organizations, the public organizations, increasingly now we have to look about how we message that to our publics and our peoples, and how we get that across to say, yeah, there's areas here we find it hard to make changes on, yeah, but we're doing all this other stuff here as well.
All right, let me break it down then, even in more simple terms for me, not for you, because you get it, and Bree get it, and Joe get it, and we'll bring Joe in a second. But right, We have major conferences that take place in certain parts of the world. Then we have our TDs, our ministers stand up and tell us this is the climate is the most critical thing at the moment, arguing so strenuously that we have to stop the burning of turf, smoky coal, that we have to move to green energy, that you have to, our fishermen will have to make sacrifices maybe in terms of their fishing waters, that people might have to endure living beside a wind turbine if they don't. And that's enforced to us all the while. And then we get to a but. There's one day a year, and it's not one day a year, of course, where that doesn't matter because we're all going to fly around the world. I'll put that to you, Joe. You know what I mean? It's a hard pill for the public to swallow, that.
Yeah, look, it absolutely is, because there's people listening to this show this morning and they're trying to figure out where they're going to get the money to buy a bag of coal. I mean, that's why this argument is a difficult argument to sell. But like, you probably know what I'm going to say in terms of St. Patrick's. It's not even St. Patrick's Day, it's St. Patrick's Week. And there's two things I would like to say in relation to it. I think it's really, really important because 1% of the global population now claim to be Irish. That's a big, big percentage of a population of well over 7 billion. And if you're looking at a case of 1 week where there is an all-out effort, and it's not just the ministers, it's Enterprise Ireland, it's IDA, it's all the different embassies around the world, and they've been building towards this. But the question I would say would be this, in order to try to get the balance that Breach and Michael talked about, there's a lot of ministerial travel throughout the year other than this week. And I think that's where we can focus now and do justice to this argument. I think there's three areas, I think, where you have essential travel as politicians. Number one is St. Patrick's Week. Also, Brussels and Strasbourg for the really important stuff of being part of the European Union and trade missions. But if you were to take the other travel and start examining how much travel actually is needed, and I think hopefully this debate might lead to that conversation.
But can I put something to you, Joe, just in relation to all this? I mean, what you're saying, you know, resonate with an awful lot of people, and what Breed has said and what Michael is saying, right? But I don't want to have a conversation in a vacuum. So we are talking about how the country's doing very well. 1% of the world identifies as Irish. We're going to go out, maybe forge new deals. It'll bring more money into the country. It's fantastic, right? But at the same time, we've been doing this for many, 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 many years, and we're post the last recession, and God forbid if we're heading into the next one. We are living in a country with an absolute housing disaster of a crisis, a health service that's completely on its knees, GPs, services that are not available. We've more people living in poverty in this county alone. You know yourself, the lowest disposal. So all of these promises of what these trips might deliver, it feels like I'm having a conversation in an alternative reality. Because where's the dividend now? Where's the dividend for the majority of us? Sorry, I think really it all sounds great, maybe for the top 5%. Maybe they'll get more money. Maybe they'll line the pockets. But it's us mugs, right, who can't afford to get on a plane or go to New Zealand or America, that don't see any hope of these trips delivering anything of a better life for us into the future. And that, for me, is the detachment, right, from big business, politics, and us real people that have to live our lives, Joe.
Yeah, well, look, I don't think it's correct to separate and, you know, doing the we and the us, because at the end of the day, if you look at our global footprint in terms of international presence in this country, you know, headquarters of major international companies, but even in Donegal alone, like we're the fintech capital of Ireland outside of Dublin. And that means that there's going to be a lot of these, you know, companies around the world and attracting other companies as well. But to back up one element of your point, and you do make a good point there, Greg, that where there is a weakness, and I found where there was a weakness, you could have a full week of very good work, ministers making good contacts and networking and doing a good work on behalf of Ireland, and they'll come home and they'll say, yes, we collaborated, we did this, there is a potential here. I think where the weakness is the follow-up. And the ministers are not in the position to do that because they're back to the day-to-day stuff, the bread and butter stuff. And I think there is an onus on all of our agencies, all of our officials within departments to have a better system in place on the follow-up. And I will call it here now, and I've been to different countries as well. I think the follow-up is poor. I've spoken to people who have lived abroad from as far away as Singapore. When there's a minister arriving, they get the call up and they say, right, let's bring businesses together. And there is a weakness in the follow-up. And I think that's something that, you know, maybe for the likes of Michael and the business he's in and you know, the students and the curriculum? Is there a piece of work there to do in terms of the follow-up in relation to initial context and all that? And I believe there's a weakness.
Yeah, and Breed, it's quite possible, not in business class, but a lot of these flights that these ministers and TDs are on might have Irish, young Irish people on them as well, not on holidays.
Absolutely, but going in the one way. Direction.
So yeah. We need to see a connection and a benefit from this.
Yeah, we need to see it trickle down. That's the issue. Look, a corporation tax is the second highest tax take in a country other than VAT. And foreign direct investment and foreign companies who employ young people here in Ireland, I'm quite sure that an awful lot of those contacts are made on the back of the work being done by Enterprise Ireland and IDEA and other state agencies. So we can't just sit at home and say, well, we're not coming out to play because we can't because of our carbon footprint. We have to go out there and sell the country and hope that it trickles down. So I am in favour of sending our TDs abroad, I'm afraid, and I think we just need to get that right, balance,
so you,
right?
What about spinning it then and saying, you know, the Emerald Isle, let's go green, say we want
we'll
your business.
Leprechaun.
No, I'm on about the green, environmental green. Say, look, at we,
all right,
you know,
okay.
We are not going to travel. We want you to come here, but, you know, we are really taking the environment, the climate separate, spin it a different way, work it to our advantage. You know,
can we not have a balance? Can we not say to these companies,
we
are coming to see you to press the flesh so that you can see what we do and what we bring to the table. And when we go back, we're going to offset that by reducing our carbon footprint in other areas. Mm. Or as Deputy McHugh has suggested, that we balance it out in other ways. But it's the power of personality.
Yeah.
Ireland has a personality, and we need to get that personality showing to the world.
Okay.
So that we can bring back, and it will trickle down.
Yeah, and finally on this, Michael, I'm not having a go at Eamon Ryan, okay, but he is the man that, you know, will cycle to work, and on many occasions his Garda escort will be driving behind him in a car. That's the world that we live in. And he's also producing the most toxicity into the environment on his travels. It feels like, I don't know what the word is, kite fly, gaslighting, what do they call it? Virtue signaling? I don't know what the words is. I never can follow them. But it does feel like someone's taking the pee out of us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say a few things. And I think that I'll come back to the previous point about the economy and that there. But sometimes it's difficult, you know, like to cut your emissions. As you say, I'm going around the bicycle and the Garda escort is following me in the car, you know, and there is going to be situations like that where you get snookered in a way. Of course, you could turn around and say, I don't need the Garda escort. That reduces that. Or you could turn around and say, well, maybe the Garda escort needs to get on bicycle.
Well, he does, or she does, in fairness, but I mean, at times.
Yeah, so there you go. I think that what you have to be seen to be doing at every stage is that you moved and made an action to try and mitigate whatever it was. So if it is a climate issue, if it is carbon, that you just didn't sit in your hands, that you said, okay, look, how can we try and improve this? What are the things we can do? Because you're never going to get it to the point that you completely nullify it or bring it to zero emissions. But what where did you move to try and make a difference? Come back to the issue then about the economy and, you know, the impact of that there and all the challenges we have in housing and health and everything else. I do think that that's a challenge for governments and that for Ireland and outside of Ireland as well. I think it's hugely challenged at the moment. I think that at one level, when we say economies are doing well, they're doing well at a macro level, okay? But when you come down then to people or to regions, and, you know, we had this slogan in the UK, you know, levelling up. And I was just looking there in the last week or so, there was a report for the border in GDP per capita was 52% of the EU 27. So, you know, if we look at the region that we're in, and if you know, people saying the housing problem is about creating supply, but for the region we're in, it's about making investment. You have to put the spend in. There's no other way around it, right? And it needs to happen. So I think in terms of nations and economies and stuff like that there. You know, if you look back over the last 30 years or so, there has been huge increases in corporate productivity, corporate profitability. And at some point in the last 10 years ago, you could see that curve nearly going vertical. However, the increase in wages and income, if we looked at it globally in terms of the Western developed nations, has stayed pretty horizontal. So there has been a decoupling that has been happening there between corporate productivity and profits and wages more generally. But if you look at it here locally, here in Donegal, we have huge imbalances as well between our more local indigenous jobs. But the benefit of the FDI companies and the larger tech companies that Joe's alluded to is they're bringing in really well-paid jobs for loads of our young people who are coming out of college, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's a hugely positive thing because that didn't exist many, many years ago. And, you know, Joe and I and others were ones of thinking, you know, well, you know, where are you going to go? Some people were going to London, some people were going to the States, et cetera, et cetera. And now more and more of those kids who are going to college can think they can get a job here and get a good income out of it too.
No, I understand this information is kind of very recent and it's going to take a time for everyone to digest. But a major research paper published yesterday claimed mica is not the primary cause of the failure of defective concrete blocks in Donegal. It's off the back of the analysis of four properties built between 2001 and 2004. Microstructural and chemical analysis combined with thermodynamic modelling was carried out on four homes affected by defective blocks in Donegal. It kind of has put to bed, I think, this peer-reviewed report that mica was the cause of our problems. It also suggests that we really need to be looking at internal leaves, foundations, and also kind of puts to bed the impact of freeze-thaw in terms of the destruction of these properties. As I say, we're all digesting this, so we'll not stay on this too long. We are going to be speaking to Professor Dunlop a little later on in the morning, I hope. Just now, that is not to limit the conversation, of course, but I'll go to you first, Deputy Joe McHugh. I mean, this is a significant, very well-researched document. It's peer-reviewed, and it kind of really needs to be taken on board by government. Would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely would agree. And I would just like to congratulate Paul Dunlop and the entire team. And I know that the recent conference was probably the trigger to get this research going. And look, it's while you need the scientific research, the word on the street have been really bamboozled by the fact that foundations have never been brought into the equation in terms of mica. And hopefully this puts that to bed. And my concern in relation to the foundations, my concern is this. I believe the foundations have been used by officials to create a system that does not require the definition of rebuild. And I think that's why we're getting caught on the regulation and go back to 1997 regulation, go back to 2007 regulation. And I think the foundations have been used as a stick to beat this scheme with.
By who, Joe? Because that's a strong statement coming from someone who, you know, is, I mean, obviously you don't have the whip at the moment, but has been around the cabinet table, has been instrumental in you know, trying to push from your perspective this. I mean, who are you talking of there? You're talking about the who?
Well, I'm talking about the new regulations that I've read, and there's a very, very specific regulation which is saying that the houses have to be built on the exact same.
So are you saying this is civil servants? Are you saying, do you believe that Dara O'Brien's complicit in this?
No, what I'm saying is this. I'm saying that the issue that I've been pushing for a long time and the issue why I voted against my own party, why I voted against the government, was on the issue of downsizing. And I know I got a bit of criticism recently for raising the issue again on the basis that people were feeling that I was telling them to downsize. I'm telling nobody to downsize, but there are a lot of people who are coming to me that wish to downsize on a voluntary basis, but they've been penalised. And I believe there has to be a reason why we're not making progress, because on the one hand, I've sat down with the Taoiseach. I've also sat down with the Attorney General. There's no legal impediment to downsizing, but I, for the life of me, cannot get to the bottom of the fact that there's a strong resistance Now, on a positive front, I know the County Council officials have made a submission to the Department with the new regulations looking for downsizing as part of their submission. So I'm still hoping that that can be got. But I'm really, really concerned that there's something going on here in relation to the foundations, because anybody that you would have spoken to in the last 6 months, year, who were got really, really exercised about the fact that how could you build a brand new house and still leave a foundation, and that may have pyrotite or may have some substandard element within it that would undermine the house. And it just, it baffles me.
Okay, before we bring Breed and Michael in, and I don't really think it's necessarily that important to ask you what it would take for you to rejoin Fine Gael. I don't really think in the wider scale of things it's that big an issue, if you know what I mean. And I mean that with respect to you. I don't mean it for me to pin you to two or three things. I'm not really sure where that gets us or gets this whole thing. But I will ask this, you know, because people are interested in it. You know, is downsizing enough for you to sort of rejoin the party that you're very loyal to and you love and you've spent your life in, and your friends and what have you are in there? I've no doubt about that. Is that enough for you, or does this report open up other questions for you? And I do note that in your answer you said that you may consider if that were a concession, right? You never said I would, so in fairness to you, you did choose your language in that regard. But what does it take now for you to rejoin Fine Gael, Joe?
Okay, the downsizing is one issue. The other issue is that the cap of the so-called cap of 420, it's not a cap of 420, it's a cap of 395, because they're including accommodation costs, storage costs, and the emergency works of 5,000. So your cap is effectively 395. So if you have a cap of 395, you have initially, before inflation, before the cost of material went up, there were 18% of the householders excluded. But because of the prices coming in from contractors at the moment, there's 50% of the people going over that cap. So that means there's people excluded. So there needs to be movement on making it more affordable for the people who can't even get to the start of this scheme. And that's my real worry. I nearly spent all day yesterday on the phone to people, with different people ringing me with mica issues. But the consistent message is people are going to find it very difficult to get on the scheme. I want the scheme started. Yes, it's an improved scheme on the previous scheme. But I think with those two issues in particular, we could make movement. And to answer your question, if I can get movement on those two issues, yes, that opens up a conversation with, okay, with the party.
And two very brief questions before we bring Breed and Michael in here. Are you still resolute in that you are not going to contest the next general election? Could you be swayed with everything that's going on? I'm not seeing an awful lot of movement to try and figure out a solution to fix the Joe McHugh problem. You know, you still retain a good level of support. You're still young, you're in good health, and we spoke to you about all of that. There'd be no shame in a change of mind. Are you wobbling on the retirement from the Dáil at all?
No, I'm not, Greg.
Okay, well, then the second question is, yeah, we might have a second, an additional seat for Europe in Midlands Northwest. Could you be tempted, maybe, if the stars aligned, to contest that for Fine Gael?
No, because it would be contradicting my position, why I'm leaving in the first place. So no, a no to both questions.
That was really quite easy then. Yeah. So, Michael, I'll go to you first. You know, I mean, this is an incredible document. I've only managed to scan it, but it kind of rips everything up and throws it all out. And at the end of the day, too, I'm so conscious of it doesn't really progress for people living in terrible conditions with heartache and little hope. It doesn't really progress things for them. We learn more, but, you know, no one's woken up today in a better position, Michael.
Yeah. It's very, very difficult. It's a sad story. It's a hard story. You know, we'll look back on this in time and think about how the authorities and responsibilities had to be dragged, how much work the public had to put into this to argue their case, and you know. That's what, you know, your government is for, is to argue the case for the people. And the people that do all this themselves. And now they're even doing more again. And it's something that on one hand, I can't believe that it had been such a long struggle and had gone on for so long and it's still going on. And it's not something any public bodies or that there, you know, could stand over and say we did a good job, you know. And I know there was good sentiments there too, because initially they were calling it the 90-10 scheme. So somebody was saying, you know, let's cover most of it, nearly all of it, right? But Joe, as you'd said many times before, yeah, that was kind of the bit that got out. And then after that, everything that happened then was, you know, how we're going to claw that back. And maybe that was a lack of everybody being on the same page. But for anybody in their homes with their families, with their kids and that there, you know, it's just incredibly hard. And in terms of us having such a successful economy, in terms of when we look back, when we had the banking crisis and the property crisis and all those sorts of things there. And I watched in how people or different people reporting on it at times, you know, how it was worked through. And at the end of the day, I mean, everybody goes for the big headline sum of money of billions, but that's going to be out over 10, 20 years.
Not to mention the massive clawback in terms of VAT and tax and job creation and absolutely. Tax from that.
I mean, you know, yeah, there's a whole analysis.
There's an argument to say, let's go full throttle at rebuilding these houses, obviously because it's the right thing to do, but also, right, I'll come back to you, Breed. You know, like, I just feel so much for everyone affected by this, and I know what this is all about personally myself here, right? But even this week, it's like, There's conversations happening that just add in insult to injury, like the fact that by 2028 the EU wants every new house to be built zero emission. Yet at the same time, we're asking people to rebuild their homes to 2008 standards. And yes, maybe there's access to another grant of 25,000-30,000 that might shore it up a little bit. But, you know, I mean, people are going, what about us? I mean, what's
there's no
going
joined
on?
Up thinking at all.
Yeah, there's
no joined up thinking at all. Look, at any homeowner who's listening to their house at night crumbling down around them and wondering where they're going with it isn't concerned about whether it's mica or pyrite. They just want this scheme up and running and they want to get it going. So I'm totally in favour of that. And I hear what Deputy McHugh has said in relation to the scheme and the limitations. I think the important priority at this stage is to get it started and get things going. And so that at least, I mean, the old Chinese proverb, when's the best time to build a tree 20 years ago? When's the second best time now? We need to get things moving now in relation to that. And the other thing I want to say is, I'm totally in awe of Deputy McHugh. He's the only politician I've ever heard on a radio station answer a question succinctly and honestly.
Yeah, but he knew what I was going to ask him. I never told him.
He didn't know what you were going to
I
think he should actually stay in politics.
Deputy McHugh knows. Deputy McHugh, he knows we don't warm anything up.
He knew what I was going to ask.
Okay. As I say, we don't do any warm-ups or anything, and Deputy McHugh can attest that, but he knew exactly what I was going to... he's been around too long not to know that. But no, I you know, it is good to get clear answers. Okay. Breed, sorry, is there anything else you wanted to add after that, by the way?
No, I'm still in awe of Deputy McHugh. Thanks.
Well, okay.
I'm shocked. I'm stunned.
Right, let's not get
stunned into silence.
Let's not get carried away with ourselves.
All right, okay.
I'm not joking. You're welcome back. We're in the company of Breed, Michael and Joe. We're talking about some of the big stories that have been making the headlines. And I mean, you know, again, following on from what we started off with in terms of, you know, building the economy, attracting businesses and the benefits from that. Again, sometimes it feels like it's a separate conversation to the reality, because we learned recently that a number of school projects are not going to proceed. We spoke to Deputy John McHugh about this before. We'll get some more views from him. But Breed, have you any concerns that, you know, when we have really important projects like schools not going ahead, and the disappointment for the teachers, headmasters, headmistresses, you know, the parents, guardians, and the pupils, some of the conditions, you know, they've built up so long just to get to the brink. Yeah. And I just wonder, I hope it's not, that we're not sort of starting to begin to see a slowdown in this type of activity, you know, or the important infrastructure like schools and roads and what have you.
Yeah, the impact on the teachers and students, a lot of these children and teachers have been working in horrific conditions in temporary outdated accommodation. Look at it, and it comes back to inflation again. It's the high construction costs and high construction inflation. A lot of these projects stalled. One, the Gaelscoil in my own hometown, Ballygunnall, stalled as a result of this. It's a toss-up now and a struggle between Pascal Donoghue, who's holding the purse strings, and Norma Foley, who's trying her best, I'm sure, to release as much funding as possible. I think something that Deputy McHugh might be able to I think it's 860 million allocated for building projects this year, which seems like a massive amount of money. But I'm sure with inflation, construction inflation is the enemy here. I'm hugely concerned about anything that impacts on education. Education for me is where it all starts and where it all ends. And we have to be seen, and we have to do something about making sure that kids who are in outdated and dilapidated prefabs and maybe schools divided over two or three campuses, we have to do something in relation to this. And it has to be a priority for Pascal Donoghue. So he's going to have to release more money to counteract this high construction inflation and open up the purse strings for Norma.
Deputy McHugh, why are we seeing these projects stalled? What's the reason?
Sorry, I was just taking down a couple of notes there. First of all, Greg Breege asked, yeah, that figure is correct. It's 860 million. That's the capital budget for this year. The reason is, I suppose, you know, the argument that will be given by Deeper and the officials on there is a 26% increase in inflation in 2 years. But that being said, if you take, for example, the three schools that are ready to go live in Donegal here, and even, you know, one that was in Laois, the Colby Special School in Laois, but for the likes of Moville, Gaelscoil, Donegal Town and Letterkenny, St Eunice and Letterkenny is ready to go to tender. Like, there will be a figure for each of those schools. Take, for example, this is not attributing to any school, say an example, a figure of 7 million, but that won't be 7 million spent next year. That'll be spent over 2 years. So you're talking 3.5 million a year. So I believe the minister doesn't have a choice, and Breed has correctly identified where the issue is here, because it is Pascal Donoghue who is asking questions around this. And certainly one of the victims of success for our county is because we have a lot of schools in the system here at the moment, and we need to ensure that the money spent, all the engineering costs, all the design teams, all the planning permissions processes and the costs associated with that, it would be an absolute abdication of responsibility across the political system, across the department, if we were to stop any of these projects.
But just
now,
in relation to a school and it's tendered for, right, is there any uplift for inflation in these agreements with the contractors?
Yeah, there was an uplift. It might have, look, it's 1.5% or in around that figure. That was introduced last year because of the increase. But like the reality of it is, there was a tender, awardee of a tender for Scoil Easygun and Buncrana. And in fairness to the company, a very reputable company, they just couldn't stand over the price because this was about 2 years ago. So the price they gave would, you know, basically they'd be out by a couple of million or
so
something.
So are we looking at these projects being retendered then, or do we know, and obviously we can't speak for every contractor that's in, if we say, right, okay, we'll, let's pick a figure of 25%, we'll increase the contract by, I'm using very basic terms, but you know what I'm saying. You know, would that resolve it, or are we going to have people that say, hold on, yeah, if I take a step back here, public anger begins to grow, maybe I can get an extra 35-40%?
Well, you see, the danger, and using Scoil Easygun and Buncrana as an example, what happened with Scoil Easygun, once they were awarded the tender contract, everything was sorted, everything was ready to go, and in fairness to the contractor, they weren't in a position to go ahead with a contractor that was going to be costing them money. So what happened there was the planning permission ran out, so Scoil Easygun had to go for planning again, the costs involved in that. Now, they're back on the process again. So there's schools like Scoil Easygun, there's schools like Errigal College in Letterkenny and Ulster National School in Letterkenny. They're in the system, and it's important that the three schools that are ready to go off the system now, basically diggers are ready to go on site in Gaelscoil, Donegal Town, diggers are ready to go on site in Moville, Letterkenny, St Union's is ready to go to tender. So we cannot stop them, because if we stop them, we're ripping the whole
capital. So what has to happen to make sure that we don't stop them then? I want to be sort of solution focused here, if you know what I mean, because some of the people affected could be listening. So what needs to happen and by whom, and is it likely to happen then?
What needs to happen is that very, very quickly around the cabinet table, and I'm hoping I'm not privy to the conversations that go on between Norman Foley and Pascal Donoghue, but I'm hoping that the pressure has been put on right around that table on the department officials to get it sorted. And I know Minister Foley's in the county at the end of the month, and I'm hoping that she will have good news with her, if not on that day or if not before it.
Okay. And is that just you being an optimist, or do you have are you getting positive soundings?
I'm looking at it logically, Greg. I can't, like, the last thing now, could you imagine if Skullcare Maestra or, you know, Moville started running out of planning permission again and they had to go back to scratch again? It would be on, it just would be unacceptable, but also would be a complete abdication of responsibility at a political level. And I think they've no choice and they have to do it. My God, the parents, the teachers that are living, you know, working in these conditions. I was in Downing's National School the last day. They have a new extension. Glen Swally National School there, don't know what day it was, on their Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. They are working in conditions now where there's a smile on their face, the staff, there's a happiness there, and it's just wrong. And when you consider the first photograph I got Monday morning was from Skullcare Maestra. There was a bucket underneath, a leaking ceiling. They're in prefabs for over nearly 24 years. Prefabs for 24 years, and they're the same prefabs. It's just unfathomable. It's wrong. I know Breeds is a Donegal town woman herself, a native, and you know exactly you'll know people in there that work there, and it's wrong. And especially a school that's, you know, doing so much for the Irish language. It's a Gael school, and parents continue to send them back because the teachers are brilliant, the staff are brilliant, they do great work, but the working conditions are just unacceptable.
Michael, to you, it's hard to add to that, I would imagine, because most of what's wrong with all of this is covered, and we hope that Devin and McHugh's former, they're still colleagues, are listening to those types of words and make the right decision. There's only one way to go here, and that's to do the right thing. You're muted there, Michael, sorry.
Sorry there, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Greg, I think Joe really got the sense of it there for us. You know, it's about the kids, it's about the teachers, it's about the impact that they have for everybody else, and the conditions that they're in is just shocking in some cases. But also say as well, you know, when you're looking at local regional economies and you're looking at jobs and things like that there, you know, the quality of your schools and your education system is really important for attracting people as well. And it's also about your health services too. So, you know, making investment in your schools has a much, much wider impact as well. And, you know, we have a fabulous place to work and live in. We just need more investment. And whether it's our schools or wherever it is, it just has to happen. That's as simple as that. There's no other way they can get around it. Investment in.
Yep. All right. Listen, just a couple of minutes to finish on a frivolous enough one, I suppose. Or maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Of course, Breed recognised the amazing success of Ireland at the Oscars. OK, we didn't walk away with arms full, but we certainly were put on the map. Some of the headlines, though, following that was the bit of jeering at the Irish presenting us as Arabic Aris. You can't understand a word we're saying, and all we do is drink. Now, I'm fully aware that we're going to see pictures probably of Joe Biden pulling a pint of Guinness in a bar somewhere, so maybe we're our own worst enemies in this regard. Is it something that we should be offended by, Breed, or should we just roll with the punches?
You know, it was completely tone deaf and deeply offensive for some people, other people. I personally didn't find it deeply offensive, but I just thought it wasn't very funny. You know, Saturday Night Live is not a program that I would watch on a regular basis anyway, and I think that it's calling them comedians is actually a disservice to comedians, you know. I just thought it wasn't very funny. Look, of course, all nations are stereotyped. You know, the French with their frog's legs and their cheese and their garlic, and the Italians being very loud but very stylish people, and cabin people being mean with money. Everybody can be stereotyped, and it is just unfortunate that so-called comedians thought that this was funny. Very offensive to Colin Farrell, a man who has struggled with alcoholism and has been sober for over 20 plus years.
Great point.
And I just thought it said more about them than it did about us. Yeah. I don't think it was deeply offensive. I just didn't think it was very funny.
And Michael, in asking the question, I'm fully conscious of the more serious stuff we've talked of and what's going on in the world. But, you know, there is a perception out there too. And maybe even all of our TDs having to fight it that, oh, you're not going to get drunk and start fighting, are you? I won't mention any names, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not completely insignificant either in terms of our global reputation, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think similar to Breed, you know, somewhere I probably touched a chord with people and they thought, I didn't like that. Or some people may have been very strongly offended by it. It was for a particular audience. It's a Saturday Night Live show that they're playing to.
And they don't pull any punches in having a go at, you know, say, for instance, people of colour. For, you know what I mean? Like, they will go hard on that every Saturday night, because I do happen to see the clips. So we kind of, in terms of ethnic groups, if we could call ourselves that, kind of got off a little bit lightly. But, I mean, that being said.
Yeah, and it might be more acceptable in another country than maybe we'll be here at the Saturday Night Live show. Mightn't go down well here at all if it was a regular show. But look, I think it's, you know, it'll pass by. I think we have a great St. Patrick's Day coming up tomorrow for everybody to enjoy it. You know, we've a fantastic diaspora out there. We've come off a long way. We've had really hard times from the times when we had to leave our shores. And the successes we've been able to make of things.
Yeah, we are. I understand exactly your sentiment, but I also want to recognise there's an awful lot of parents whose kids have left their shores over the last few months. And I'm not saying you're not recognising that, Michael, but it's just, if you don't mind me adding that on as well. Finally, Joe, in a minute, are you upset?
Yeah, look, it's annoying, but I think Bridge and Michael got it there, and Bridge is right. Like, it wasn't even funny, and that's the sad part, that it was portrayed as humour.
Some of my father's jokes are funnier.
That's a difficult. But I'll tell you one thing. I think it affected the chances of those two brilliant films, Callan Cuin and Banshees of Inisherin. I really do think it affected their chances, because they were on their way to big awards, and I think it did damage. And can I just lastly say this, Greg? I think we all get these wee videos from time to time on WhatsApp and all that, on stereotyping loads of stuff. I think we all have responsibility. I got loads of videos of that kind of stuff, and I just deleted them. So I think maybe we've a responsibility to take ownership of when something's wrong, we know it's wrong, and not to be forwarding it on to people.
Okay, well, enjoy your weekends.
Thank you.
Leading any parades, Joe? Are you the Grand Marshal anywhere?
Well, look, believe it or not, I haven't been down the family hasn't been down the country since Christmas, so we're going down the country for St. Patrick's Day.
If I was running
the next election, maybe I might have to say something different, but we're going down, the family's going down, but we're back up playing football on Sunday in Letterkenny.
We're really getting an insight today, aren't we? All right, listen. I'm on about in terms of if you're running for election, you'd have been in Carrigart Main Street. But anyway, listen, come here. Take care of yourself. Thanks very much indeed. Michael, bye-bye. Have a lovely one. Breed's already gone. I don't know if I did that or she did it. But anyway, Breed and Michael, thank you both very much, and have a lovely weekend. Take care.